Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, we go to Cuba, where our correspondents have been following Pope Benedict XVI's arrival and his first Eucharistic liturgy on the island nation. We hear why this papal journey has a more hidden side and what it has to do with Africa. And what did one pope have to do with helping deter world nuclear annihilation? We go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis in the 1960s to find out. Benedict is in Cuba, where he arrived Monday after a four-day visit to Mexico. On Tuesday, the Holy Father paid a brief visit to the National Shrine of Our Lady of Charity of El Cobre in Santiago before heading off to the airport to fly the one-and-a-half-hour journey to Havana, Cuba. Well, not long after his arrival on Monday, the Pope celebrated an outdoor evening mass in Santiago de Cuba's Plaza Antonio Maceo. Philippa Hitchin is traveling with the Pope and filed this report.
Nothing is impossible for God. Those words from St. Luke's Gospel of the angel Gabriel to Mary, as she learns that God has chosen her to be the mother of his son, rang out as the sun set across the central square in Santiago de Cuba, where Pope Benedict celebrated Mass on Monday, marking the Feast of the Annunciation.
A la Virgen de la Caridad del Cobre, patrona de Cuba, en el 400 aniversario del hallazgo,
Mary, the Pope explained in his homily, occupies a central place in the great mystery of the Incarnation at the heart of our Christian faith. She also occupies a central place in the life of the Church in Cuba, which has been celebrating a jubilee for the 400th anniversary of Our Lady of Charity of El Cobre, an ancient wooden statue which was found floating in the sea off the northern coast of the island by three local fishermen. Normally, the precious image is kept in a shrine which the Pope visits on Tuesday morning, but for the whole of the past year, it's been travelling on pilgrimage around the towns and villages of this island nation, drawing unexpectedly large crowds and reinforcing the public face of the Church in this staunchly communist country.
Bienvenidos, queridos hermanos y hermanas. Llegados de diversos lugares de Cuba y del mundo para participar de esta celebración junto al Santo Padre Benedicto XVI.
The main reason for this papal pilgrimage to Cuba is to symbolically close the Jubilee year. Thus, the 60-centimeter-high statue of Our Lady with a golden mantle was brought in a glass case on an open-top car to the Mass, making her own tour of ecstatic crowds before the Popemobile followed close behind. Despite a lone protester shouting anti-government slogans at the start of the Mass, there were few signs of the tensions that continue to characterize church-state relations in this country, a problem the Pope referred to in his meeting with President Raúl Castro at the airport earlier in the day.
Deseo hacer un llamado para que den nuevo vigor a su fe, para que vivan de Cristo y para Cristo.
But in his homily, he spoke of the effort, daring and self-sacrifice that people here face every day as they struggle to build a more open and inclusive society, a goal which many here are hoping that this papal visit to Cuba will help to encourage.
Well, the head of Vatican Radio's German service, Father Bernd Hagenkort, is also in Cuba with Pope Benedict. He paid a visit to the shrine of Our Lady of El Cobre, which he said received a very special gift at Monday's liturgical celebration. Let's listen.
Monday evening, local time, the sanctuary of the Virgen de la Caridad de Cobre in Cuba received a gift. Pope Benedict XVI honored it with a golden rose. The custom going back to the Middle Ages, popes used to hold such a golden rose during a procession on the fourth Sunday of Lent called Letare. Pope Eugene called this rose a sign of Christ's passion, the gold symbolizing the resurrection and the thorns, the suffering. These roses were conferred to dignitaries of the Church, and they carried a double meaning. The conferral meant both an honor and a reminder. Do not forget the responsibilities that come with being a Christian. In that spirit, the group of recipients widened. Princes and kings received it, as well as abbeys and sanctuaries. Today, only the latter are being honored by this special grace. Benedict XVI himself gave roses to Altötting and Maria Zell, Fatima and Aparecida. To these he today added the sanctuary of the Virgen de la Caridad. The rose is not the only remarkable gift that can be found there. Already Pope John Paul II had given a golden crown, with which he had crowned the Mother of God, national patron saint of Cuba. Ernest Hemingway's Nobel Prize for Literature can also be found there. After receiving it in 1954, he dedicated it to the Virgin. It was stolen, given back, and now it is kept safe. Among these famous dedications, there are numerous others. For example, a plaque a mother gave asking the Virgen de la Caridad to keep her sons safe from the guerrilla. The names of her sons, Raúl and Fidel Castro.
Well, as we heard earlier, Philippa Hitchin is accompanying the Holy Father and his entourage. She was on the papal plane Monday when it touched down on Cuban soil just after lunchtime on its arrival from Mexico. She tells us what the Pope had to say to the Cuban president, officials and religious who were on hand to welcome him to the island nation.
A gentle breath of fresh air giving new strength to the church in Cuba. That was how Pope Benedict described the visit of his predecessor to this Caribbean island 14 years ago. As we stepped off the plane in Santiago de Cuba on the far eastern tip of the island, a gentle breeze rose off the sea to greet us too, a welcome respite from the heat and humidity on the airport tarmac. As the Pope walked over to the covered podium with Cuban President Raúl Castro, a deafening 21-gun salute was fired at disturbingly close range from cannons at the edge of the runway, as a huge image of a very young Fidel Castro looked on approvingly from the airport control tower. It was he who welcomed Pope John Paul on that first historic visit that proved a remarkable milestone in relations between church and state in this communist country.
Uno de los frutos importantes de aquella visita fue la inauguración de una nueva etapa en las relaciones entre la Iglesia y el Estado cubano.
Pope Benedict acknowledged this new climate of cooperation and trust in his address to the current president, but he pointed out that many areas remain in which greater progress can and ought to be made, especially regarding the role that religion can play in the public life of Cuban society.
Con motivo de la celebración del 400 aniversario del hallazgo de la bendita imagen de la Virgen de la Caridad de Cobre.
Referring to the ancient wooden statue of Our Lady of Charity, revered as patron and mother of the church here, Pope Benedict said devotion to her has sustained the faith and continues to inspire the defense and promotion of dignity and human rights with ever greater strength today.
Di quanto dignifica la condizione umana y sus derechos fundamentales. Y continúa haciéndolo aún hoy con más fuerza.
The Pope said he's following in the footsteps of countless pilgrims down the centuries as he comes here to kneel in front of this image in the shrine of El Cobre, asking her to guide the Cuban people in the ways of justice, peace, freedom and reconciliation.
De esta amada nación, por los caminos de la justicia, la paz, la libertad, y la reconciliación.
Significantly, he addressed his words repeatedly to all Cubans, wherever they may be, a clear reference to the need for dialogue between the people of this island and the large Cuban community living in exile in the United States. More than just a gentle breeze, many here are hoping Pope Benedict's words may help to bring winds of change in relations between Washington and Havana to finally achieve Pope John Paul's wish that Cuba may open up to the world, and the world may open up to Cuba. In Santiago de Cuba with Pope Benedict, I'm Philippa Hitchin.
Well, if the Pope is hoping that Cuba may open up to the world, it's interesting to take a step back in time to a moment when Cuba's openness put it on the map of slave traders from Africa heading to the Americas. A route, as Father Berndt explains, that Benedict himself has been following in his apostolic journeys.
It is a hidden story that lies behind the last apostolic visits of Pope Benedict. He is following the trail of the slaves. He literally visits the symbolic places of capture, abduction, and exploitation of thousands and thousands of Africans. Last year it was Benin, today it is Cuba. On the shores outside the city of Ouidah in Benin, from where shipload after shipload of human cargo was sent over the Atlantic Ocean, there stands the Gate of No Return, remembering the origin of the Trail of the Slaves. Not far away, there stands the Gate of Reconciliation, constructed by Christians in the year 2000. Pope Benedict XVI visited in November 2011, deliberately choosing this symbolic place to remind the Church and the world of Africa's contribution to peace and reconciliation. The Church in Africa is called to foster peace and justice. In the words of Benedict XVI, both gates do remind us of our duty to denounce and fight all forms of slavery. Today, in Santiago de Cuba, Benedict XVI stands at the arrival point of the Trail of Slavery. Latin America and the Caribbean islands were beneficiaries of slavery. The enormous wealth of the sugar barons is still visible in the columns and the plastering of the great houses in the center of La Habana. The sugar plantations made the island rich, and the slaves paid for it with their labor and their lives. Africa's heritage is very visible here in Cuba. A walk through the streets, a look inside one of the churches, the music, the literature. All of that gives testimony to the traditions of Africa. Also, the story of the independence of Cuba cannot be separated from the abolitionist movement. The place Pope Benedict visits, the sanctuary of the Virgin de la Caridad, is the symbolic origin of both. In 1801, a manifest for the liberation of the slaves was published here. 60 years later, the abolitionist movement also made it the focal point for Cuba's independence. The Virgin is the patron of liberation from slavery as well from colonialism. The future has its roots in the past and in the present. These words of Pope Benedict in Benin mark the perspective of this hidden story of the papal visits. Racism and discrimination are not things of the past. The struggle against them is part of the calling of the Church, not only because it is a human duty to do so, but also because it is the only way to justice and peace. To achieve this, the courage that comes from forgiveness is needed, as the Pope told the Church in Africa. During his visit here in Latin America, Benedict XVI is stressing the need for reconciliation in relation to the violence in connection to narcotraffic, and he does so with a view to the society in Cuba. However, he always does so in regard to the past connecting his last papal visits. The symbol for this, the second gate in Ouidah, the Gate of Reconciliation. From Cuba, Father Bernd Hagenkort.
Pope Benedict XVI's first apostolic journey to Cuba is being watched with interest across the globe. Before him, as we heard previously, Pope John Paul II traveled to the Latin American island nation in 1998 a historic visit, the first ever papal journey to Cuba, during which he met with President Fidel Castro. However, one of John Paul's predecessors had already played a key role in Cuba's recent history, helping to prevent an escalation of Cold War violence that could have resulted in nuclear war. With the Soviet Union and the United States flexing their military might and the arms race heating up in the early 1960s, people the world over were afraid that nuclear annihilation was just days away, and Cuba was the place that might trigger it. And as narrated in the program produced and presented by Veronica Scarisbrick, things came to a head in the fourth year of Pope John XXIII's papacy with the Cuban Missile Crisis in October 1962.
It was 1962 and the Cuban Missile Crisis raised the specter of a nuclear war. A Roman pontiff had been working behind the scenes to avoid this confrontation, his name Pope John XXIII. He voiced his concern for peace through the microphones of Vatican Radio.
Nous supplions tous les gouvernants qu'ils fassent tout ce qui est en eux pour sauver la paix.
The date was the 25th of October. Speaking in French, Pope John XXIII highlighted the responsibility of world leaders to avoid a war that would have unpredictable and horrific effects. He appealed to them to listen to the cry of anguish reaching out from people from the four corners of the earth, a cry for peace. The world leaders he was appealing to were the first Catholic president of the United States, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and communist Russian Premier Nikita Khrushchev. It's hard to think of this gentle pope, best remembered as good Pope John, as having really had such an instrumental role in helping world leaders back away gracefully from terrifying confrontation. But it seems he was quick to respond when the opportunity to act as a mediator arose.
We know that immediately before President Kennedy had made contact with Pope John XXIII, so the initiative came there from President Kennedy on the American side.
Church historian, Jesuit Norman Tanner, sheds light on how Pope John XXIII was able to influence this crisis situation. But Professor Tanner is also careful to warn against any exaggeration of this role as a papal peacemaker, a role difficult to measure, best described as a factor in the crisis situation rather than a crucial intervention, one Americans weren't particularly keen to publicise at the time.
True, it hasn't been greatly publicised from the American side because Kennedy especially didn't want to give the impression that he was too much under Vatican influence, being the first Catholic president, so that side of things had to be kept quiet a bit. But it's clear from later records that, yes, Kennedy did approach the Pope. On the Russian side, too, we know that there were contacts with Pope John XXIII just before this broadcast, and we know later that Khrushchev publicly acknowledged his gratitude and his debt to John XXIII for, as it were, letting him off the hook. Giving him reason for withdrawing the ships which were carrying the missiles to Cuba.
And Russian Premier Khrushchev's gratitude transpired once again when, less than a year after this crisis, on learning of the death of Pope John, he sent a cable to the Vatican expressing condolences. It ran as follows.
We retain good memories of John XXIII, whose fruitful activities for the maintenance and strengthening of peace have earned wide recognition and won him the respect of peace-loving peoples.
And it was to peace-loving peoples that the elderly Pope John dedicated his last encyclical, Pacem in Terris, or Peace on Earth, in which he called for social and international peace. With this document, which can be perceived as his last testament, published as it was only a couple of months before his death, he broke new ground by addressing it not as tradition dictated to the hierarchy, clergy, and Catholic faithful, but to all men of goodwill.
He's not coming out of it so much from a purely Catholic position, and he is appealing to all nations, all states. that worldwide dimension is at least a new emphasis. Perhaps before John the 23rd, there was more emphasis on peace with justice, that the rights of a Catholic state, a Catholic society to defend itself. But John the 23rd perhaps appealed more simply to human nature, human rights, and the importance of peace in itself for all people, and in a way, as it were, transcended the immediate concerns of the Catholic Church.
A quality President Kennedy himself attributed to Pope John the 23rd in his message to the Vatican on receiving the news of the Roman Pontiff's death.
He was the chosen leader of world Catholicism, but his concern for the human spirit transcended all boundaries of belief or geography. The ennobling precepts of his encyclicals and his actions drew on the accumulated wisdom of an ancient faith for guidance in the most complex and troublesome problems of the modern age.
And less than a month later, when the young American president came to the Vatican on an official visit to the newly elected Pope Paul VI.
With great joy, we welcome Your Excellency to the Vatican.
He did not fail to mention Pope John the 23rd and his encyclical Pacem in Terris. Proof, perhaps, that whereas the exact relevance of the role Pope John the 23rd played in the Cuban Missile Affair is impossible to assess, his words did help diffuse a crisis situation. I'm Veronica Scarsbrick.
On the Feast of the Annunciation in Santiago de Cuba on Monday, Pope Benedict reminded us of Mary's centrality in the mystery of the Incarnation and at the heart of our Christian faith, and her central role in the life of the Cuban Church. It is a day to remember the Blessed Virgin's yes to the Lord. On the Feast of the Annunciation, Catholics celebrate the angel Gabriel's appearance to the Virgin Mary, announcing that she has been chosen to be the mother of our Lord. Usually celebrated on March 25th, the feast can be transferred to another date if it falls on a Sunday in Lent. In the following reflection, Sister Toni Harris, justice and peace promoter for the Dominican Sisters International, tells us how we, like Mary, can welcome Christ in our everyday lives.
A few years ago, another sister and I traveled from the United States to Rome for a meeting. Since we were going to Italy, we decided to visit Florence. We were especially interested in seeing the wonderful work of the Dominican artist Fra Angelico, or Fra Giovanni, of Fiesole. In the mid-15th century, Fra Angelico lived many years in the monastery of San Marco in Florence. Most of this monastery is now a museum. On the walls and in the rooms there, Fra Angelico painted many frescoes, most of which depict Dominic miraculously present in important events in the life of Christ. However, as one climbs the staircase to the second level of the monastery and rounds the corner, a large fresco of the Annunciation rises up at the top of the stairs. Now, by large, I mean 7.5 feet by 10.5 feet, more than 2 meters by 3 meters. The beautiful painting is in a position that assures an overwhelming emotional impact on the viewer. As we froze on the staircase in awe of the more than 5 centuries-old painting, my sister companion said to me, "If seeing this fresco was all that we did during our trip to Italy, it would have been enough." I had to agree. The 25th of March is the date when we usually celebrate the church solemnity that Fra Angelico's fresco depicts. However, it seems to me that the event of the Annunciation should be considerably more overwhelming for us than the painting. A young woman, Mary of Nazareth, agreed to a mysterious invitation. "Behold, you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you shall name him Jesus. He will be called great and will be called Son of the Most High. Giving us an example of openness to the divine mystery, Mary agrees to what she could not have fully understood. Her willingness to participate in this mystery made it possible for God to demonstrate love for the world. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son. As was true for Mary, our lives also present us with invitations to help Jesus take flesh, to make God's love for the world visible. The words of Meister Eckhart, 13th century Dominican, emphasize this. He said, "We are all meant to be mothers of God. What good is it to me if this eternal birth of the divine Son takes place unceasingly, but does not take place within me? And what good is it to me if Mary is full of grace, if I am not also full of grace? What good is it to me for the Creator to give birth to his Son, if I do not also give birth to him in my time and my culture? This then is the fullness of time, when the Son of Man is begotten in us." I believe that giving birth to Jesus in our time and culture means saying yes to the invitation to live the gospel of Jesus every day. When we reflect seriously on this gospel, and when we see deeply the world in which we live, we cannot help but be challenged to work to bring our reality into closer conformity with gospel demands. That challenge means working toward the elimination of everything in our society that does not respect and sustain the basic dignity, fundamental rights, and decent quality of life for all persons. I believe that this work is what gives birth to Jesus in our time and culture. A poem written about the Annunciation by Bishop Robert Morneau, auxiliary of Green Bay, Wisconsin, in the United States, is one of my favorites.
Were others asked, a lassie from an isle in a distant sea, a maiden in the North Africa, or a slave girl from the Congo? How many times were angels sent and returned, unheard, unheeded? Was Mary 10th on salvation's list, or the 100th? And you, my soul, was fiat spoken when the angel came?
As we celebrate God's announcement to Mary of Nazareth, the word that made her the mother of God, let us commit ourselves to continue to nurture the Word of God within us, and may Jesus continue to take flesh as we more authentically live his gospel.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.